Hello, and welcome to the Anti-Fragile Tarot Podcast. This is your resident cardslinger, Susanna, here with a ever-so-slightly late episode. Forgive me if this one sounds a little patchy. I developed a cough last week, which is part of why this is delayed, and I haven't been able to record. The good news is most of this podcast episode is pre-recorded because we are finally getting to the interview I recorded with Margaret Toth, aka Peggy, aka Egypt Urnash, who created and wrote and arted the Tarot of the Silicone Dawn. You've definitely heard me talk about this on my podcast before, and I've been hyping this episode up for a while. I'm so sorry. The sound quality of the interview is not the absolute greatest. There were some connectivity issues with me and Peggy, but I think you'll be able to hear enough of it and just listen extra close. So this is not the best episode to listen to half-heartedly if you really want to hear what's going on. So if you, for some reason, haven't heard the good news about the Tarot of the Silicone Dawn, I am here to tell you. So what is this deck? I really like to lovingly call the Silicone Dawn Tarot Plus because it is more than the 78 cards of tarot. You know, a tarot deck is the major arcana, the four suits with the court cards. That makes our 78. Well, the Tarot of the Silicone Dawn has all that and more. I should note, before I get you too hyped up about this, as of this second, the Tarot of the Silicone Dawn is out of print. I happened to get it a few years ago. Actually, one of my good friends, Lloyd, gave it to me as a gift, and I happened to get it when it was still a reasonable price. But right now, you can only find copies for like $300. There was one seller in the UK that seemed to have it, but that order got canceled. So, if you do see it online for a reasonable price, I would be suspicious. And the order may not even go through, so there's that to consider. Part of the reason why I did this interview is because, I'm a big fangirl of this deck and of Peggy. And I also know that she is looking to reprint it. There's no definite plans. You know, she's kind of... She's doing this big, like, cross-country move right now, so that's on hold. But she's definitely talking about doing it and still wants to do it, and it's just a matter of everything working out at the right time. So the more interest that there is in the deck, the more likely a reprint is to happen. So hopefully this episode will go a bit of a way towards getting some more interest. So let me tell you some of the things I love about this deck. The artwork is incredible. It's so colorful, so imaginative, and so diverse. You see different skin colors, you see different body types, you see different gender presentations. It's really incredible. Peggy herself is a trans woman, and that really informs some of her, or a lot of her art. And it's so important that we have that in the tarot world because, you know, a lot of the occult world is definitely diverse, but a lot of it isn't. And it's really nice to see that kind of thing reflected in tarot instead of, like, having a lot of decks that appeal to queer people be animal-friendly decks. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with, you know, resonating with animal imagery or, you know, being a furry or whatever, but I still think it's really important that we see more human diversity in our decks. What else do I love about this deck? I love that it has this, like, varnish overlay that does these really cool things when you hold the cards up to the light, adds things, changes things. It's really neat, and it's really hard to capture in a picture or even a video. So, as much as I always say that the physical deck doesn't really matter, I kind of like that it grounds you to the deck a little bit. It's also a really interesting deck because Peggy swaps the elemental significance of wands and pentacles. So wands are earth and pentacles are fire. And it makes some kind of sense because, you know, you can forge a coin with fire and it you know, doesn't just, you know, it's not destroyed, but you can't burn a wand and not have it be destroyed. Although that destructive energy of the wands is pretty well echoed in modern interpretations of the Suit of Wands, but that's neither here nor there for this deck. This deck does this swap, does this huge change, and does it just so seamlessly and so well that sometimes when you're reading with it, you forget that these suits are often other things. I also really love the extra cards in this deck. So you have the 99 of each suit, which is probably my favorite thing, where there's literally 99 of each of the representations of the suit on that card. It's like the excess. You have these other cards, History and She is Legend and Maya and the Aleph. They're all really, really nice to read, but they're all really fun and cool, or kind of dangerous and sexy and weird. It's all these things and more. I know I sound like I'm just really hyping it up, but I love this deck. There are a couple of downsides. One thing of the original run is that the cards are really small. They're smaller than typical playing card size, which is definitely smaller than standard tarot size. So it is kind of nice because I do have small hands. I like mini decks, but for the complexity of the art on these cards, having them be small is a little tricky. Bigger decks are definitely one of the number one things that people who've been asking for reprints want. That said, even if the reprint comes out in another small deck, there's a charm to it. And also because there's so many extra cards, if you're doing big spreads, it just makes it that much easier to go nuts. It can be a little bit difficult to read with, though. I happen to love its really irreverent style. I believe Margaret has something on her website about this deck giving you the finger. I haven't found it to be mean, but I also don't really personify my decks in that way for the most part. But because of all the changes, because of the extra cards, if you're reading with them, and for me, if I'm reading with this deck, I don't want to leave out all the cool things that make it awesome. So this can be a little bit of a challenge to read with if you don't read with it frequently or even exclusively. I actually took it off of my Etsy for a long time because I found that doing readings with it was really difficult. So I recently re-added it as an option, but it's its own standalone thing. So I charge a little more for it than I do for some of my other readings. So yeah, I definitely wouldn't say it's a beginner-friendly deck, and it's not great for people who are purists about tarot. I am neither of those things, and I still don't read with it that frequently, but I almost always bring it to any explicitly LGBTQIA events that I do. I like to do personal readings with it sometimes, because, you know, I myself am bisexual, and I don't know, it's such a beautiful deck, and even if sometimes I feel like I have it more as a collector deck than a working deck, I'm okay with that. I enjoy owning it, and I enjoy knowing that it's there, and sharing it with other people. So, it's also really nice that Margaret is so awesome and approachable and human and weird and cool. It's nice when someone that you look up to in any community, or, you know, someone you look up to in general, turns out not to be a flaming pile of garbage. And I had so much fun doing this interview that we talked for like another half hour after we stopped, which was annoying because there were some really great things that I didn't record because I didn't hit record the whole time. But that's okay. You can find out for yourself how awesome she is to talk to. You can email her at Egypt at urnash, U-R-N-A-S-H dot com. So again, E-G-Y-P-T at U-R-N-A-S-H dot com. Yeah, feel free to email her, let her know, hey, I love this deck, I want to reprint, I like your other work, whatever, whatever. And I go over in the interview how you can contact her as well, or she goes over. But I want to put that out there. You know, this started because I had followed her directions on her website and emailed her about wanting a reprint. And she was just so freaking cool and nice that I emailed her saying I wanted to do an episode about this deck and why I like it, and should I wait to try to time it for a big like Kickstarter push or something. And on a goof, I got really, really bold, and I have a lot of anxiety, so I don't get bold very often. But I got really bold, and I said, would you like to do an interview for my podcast? And she said yes, and I spent the rest of that day freaking on cloud nine. I was like telling everyone, oh my god, look at this, this is awesome. So, yeah. Just because she was so approachable, here we are. And now I will leave you to my interview with her. I really hope you enjoy it. I have a couple more interviews lined up this year that I'm really excited about doing. I'm not making you any promises about when those are coming out because it took me a couple of months to get this one out. But to be fair, nursing school is almost over. It's like my final exam is less than a month away. Okay, that's a little terrifying. I'll be happy when it's over and I'll be able to devote a little bit more time to this enterprise, I think. So, without any further ado, the interview. Thank you again for agreeing to do this. Made my day.
Yay. I'm honestly eternally amazed that people are into my deck sometimes. I made it just for me.
I feel like that's how a lot of these things kind of go. Like, oh, I want this because I don't see anything like this. And then, oh, other people also have that need or want.
Yep. I mean, it's like if it's only for one in a million, there's still many, many millions of people in the world, you know?
Yes. It's enduringly popular. I think I came across your deck because of a bunch of Chaos Magic groups. And people were talking about, you know, Chaos Magic-y decks, and this one came up, and I was like, wait, this is awesome. both in the traditional Chaos Magic sense and the just pure Chaos sense, I guess.
All right, well, all right. Do you want me to just rambling, or do you have some questions?
Yeah, I think I wanted to just, you know, chat for a second before we got to, like, official interview time.
Right.
But I hope your day is going well.
Not too bad. I just got up and went to get something to drink during this and ran into my landlord who was like, hey, are you ever going to pay your rent for this month? Because there is some bank snafus and I had to get the appropriate routing numbers and everything. And I'm like, yes, I've got the money. I've just been having a long couple weird damn days and haven't had the energy to actually figure out the bank, the new way the bank wants me to pay it and shit like that.
God.
Aggressively mundane.
I think this is part of why I stick with Bank of America, even though they're, you know, evil, because at least it's fairly consistent. Yeah, I'm probably going to transition away from it eventually. It just hasn't happened yet. Got a lot of other plates spinning around.
I know that.
Okay.
I mean, like, you know, they hooked me up with some investments, and I think some of them are being evil, and I should deal with that at some point. But, you know, they're less. Some of my money is in not evil places too, so that's good to know.
Yeah, you definitely. I definitely feel strongly about the lesser of the evils. Like, we're in late stage capitalism. What can we really do?
Organize, unize.
Get in there.
Do you have the time for that? Give money to the people who are.
Right. Yeah, I work in healthcare, and I wish I was more active in my union, but I'm in school, so I'll be more active when I'm not in school. But it's such a relief to be in a job with a union for once in my life.
Oh, hell yes.
My old company was so, I work at like a CVS. It was so aggressively anti-union. It's like this is awful.
We've been raised to think so under so much propaganda that unions are terrible, but look at what unbridled capitalism without unions does for the worker.
I had this terrible, well, now ex-friend, one of those gay Republicans,
Oh,
and
yeah.
he was railing against me about unions and, oh my God, you're going to be making less money. So I went from a job where I was making like $13.03 an hour, and it was a non-union job. And then I moved to a union job where I was making $12.84 an hour. I was making less per hour, but because they weren't fucking around about my breaks and like actually paying for some of the breaks, even though it was, coded under non-productive time or whatever, I was still getting more per paycheck with less per hour.
More per paycheck for the same or even less amount of actual time doing the job. Fuck yeah.
And I mean, our union isn't the greatest, but it's better than nothing. They roll over too quickly, but it's also it's a tough. I'm in New Jersey, so it's a lot of tough business decisions over here. But it's every little bit.
Which is optimized for the most profit and the least expenses, and you gotta fight against that. So anyway,
All right,
screaming
back to
liberty
tarot.
here. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm sure I'll have some kind of actual preamble on my, what
Yeah.
I'll be recording in a couple of days. I guess we'll start now. So thank you again for agreeing to interview for this. This totally makes my day, week, month. I guess the first thing is, I guess, introduce yourself as much as you would like.
All right, I'm Margaret Trout. I'm also Egypt Ernash and multiple other names because you tend to accumulate names on the internet. I'm a trans lady who is originally from New Orleans, spent some time in the animation industry where I learned to draw my ass off, and that animation is more work than I really care to put into work. And I made this queer ass tarot deck that I am eternally delighted that actually connects with other people to the point where now that it's out of print, people are like, oh my God, can I get a new one? It's not worth $300. And I'm like, dude, no, it isn't. But.
Well, I think for some people it might be. I bring it out whenever I'm doing explicitly queer friendly events, and I bring it to some others, but I always make sure it's there because people resonate with it so much, especially the void cards. Like, so what made you decide that this was the deck that you were going to do, or kind of how did it come about?
Well, I was at that point in my life where I was like, I think what I need in my life is a tarot deck. And I started looking around at some decks and I found some that sort of worked for me, stuff like the postmodern tarot and things like that. But it's like, I wanted a deck that was going to talk to a queer femi-trans woman who grew up on sci-fi and comics and who also likes bright cartoony stuff. And oh my God, there are so many decks that are cartoony that are just like, I took, that are just like, I'm using cartoony as an excuse to take every shortcut I can to not actually put in the work involved in drawing a goddamn tarot deck. And, I've also got a large part of skepticism about the whole thing in parts of my brain. I'm like, I wanted to have a deck that spoke to that too. And basically, like, there was one night where I was either drunk or stoned, probably stoned. I think I was mo generally more stoned at that time in my life. And I started sketching out the basic major arcana. And then I dug up my old copy of the manual for the Thoth deck and dug up a copy of Mathers's book T off of sacredtext.org. And I started poking at it, And about a year and a half later, I had the basic 78 cards and an exhibition and a couple of the extra cards that would become the Tarot of the Silicon Dawn. And that kind of snowballed. They were like, we have we have this new process that our printer can do for us with the spot gloss. And I was initially skeptical. And then they sent me the first deck that they'd done with it, which was a reprint of the Quantum Tarot.
My
And
husband has that. Yeah. It's a cool deck.
Do you have the Lo Scarabeo 2.0 Quantum?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, if you look at it, it's plain with the spot gloss, but it's like, it's just, we took the existing art and we put gloss on, I think, like the frames of the cards and on selected elements. And I just looked at that and I was like,
I love the 99 so much. Whenever I'm talking to other people about your deck, which I was actually doing quite a bit last night when I was comparing Rider-Waite and Toth, or I know everyone pronounces it different. I was comparing the different systems. I mentioned the Silicon Dawn. I was like, there's a 99 of every suit.
Honestly, the 99 started, I was about halfway through the deck, and it's the 99. It's the lord of every extra, of every extend. Its meaning is a free man's. You know, it's just me taking the piss out of the whole tarot thing. And, you know, it needed to be there. And then ultimately, when it turned into the deck, I was like, okay, what is a serious meaning? But also, if any of the 99s turn up in a reading, that might be a cue to be like, just kick back and laugh at how absurd life is. And I think it's valuable that the deck can do that.
I totally agree. I feel like a lot of occult communities just take themselves so seriously. And it's not always productive.
My introduction to the occult was, and I'm not entirely sure I recommend this as an introduction because there's some serious stuff that seriously hasn't aged well. But my introduction to this kind of thinking was the goddamn Illuminatus trilogy by Robert Anton Wilson and Robert Shea.
I've been meaning to get through that forever. I got into the Principia Discordia years ago. When I was in high school, I kind of stumbled on it because of some internet trickery. I talked about in another episode on Discordianism. The short version is that there was an AOL Instant Messenger bot that would connect two people, but not.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I did some digging and I found the Principia Discordia from that. And I've loved that for years. I think that kind of has some of the similar energy that you were talking about like taking this serious, you know, metaphysical thought, but also having a sense of humor about it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I came to the Principia through Illuminatus trilogy, and I don't want to poke around with her, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of dipped a toe into a lot of the you know, the DKMU stuff and the online, you know, Chaos Magic community. I think I found that the larger community is still not quite where I want to be. There's too much, like especially with online Discordianism lately, I feel like there is less of a sense of joy and irreverence and more of a sense of like, let's go for shock value, which, eh.
I think most of the online Discordianism I see is like, I subscribe to the Discordian subreddit and that's about it. And that's just people basically, you know, they're doing Discordia memes. And, you know, so every now and then someone comes there and asks for advice on the Discord chat channel, and people are aggressively Discordianism chaos kind of vibe that was around as I was growing up. And that, too, that's just deteriorated into a whole bunch of...
Wait, is that a thing?
Yeah. Are you familiar with... have you ever heard of this browser game called Fallen London?
I've heard of it. I don't do a ton of gaming myself. I'm like a secondhand gamer. I mostly just play Pokemon. Well, I wouldn't call your tarot undertaking lazy. And I did not get Decrypting Rita. I backed the Kickstarter. I think I like missed the files somehow or something. But I don't think I'd call you lazy. But I call myself lazy, so I think I understand.
I can definitely hook you up with the file for that later. Sorry about that. Shit.
Oh, I, Yeah, I think I got really busy and it just kind of got subsumed.
Yeah.
So yeah, so you do obviously we've done this tarot, which everyone I've spoken to who has seen it thinks is just fantastic. I think you're kind of on the money with the dogma that would arise from an actual Order of the Silicon Dawn, but the idea is really fun. And I think I vibe with a lot of what you're saying about, I'm fairly skeptical about how I approach tarot and occult stuff. Like I was raised Jewish and my mom was also really witchy. Like she was on that like new age, trend. She was into tarot. I grew up with it. And yeah, I do it a lot. I mean, I have a whole side business and podcast and everything, but I'm also, I'm pretty agnostic about how much of it is spiritual and how much of it is psychological and whether that even matters.
I mean, I think yeah, that is a place that I come from and stick around in. I like to refer to having the inner magician with a capital M and the inner skeptic with a capital S. It's important that the skeptic step aside for a while and just let the magician believe that this shit works and this shit has effects. And I've never really done serious attempts to really push at it, but things have gotten just interesting enough ever since I finished the tarot that I'm like, the skeptic is willing to admit that maybe the magician has something. The skeptic isn't going to make plans that require the magician to succeed at doing an operation, but the skeptic is not going to sit there and tap her feet and go like, God, why are you wasting your time on this? We could be doing something that has a real effect when we are doing a magical operation. So, I mean, I don't know. Magic is complicated and weird, and I have not really pushed far enough into it to be completely convinced, but I'm definitely not convinced.
Maybe a skeptic card in the next edition.
Seriously. I
Um,
mean,
that that
I
just
am
oh.
thinking for the next edition there, I'll probably change a couple of the extras. I was sort of, and that is a good one to throw to think about throwing in. I almost want to have it be like an alternate for the magician. Actually, that's a very good idea. Thank you. I'm going to write that down.
Well, it will be on the internet for posterity in a few days. What else was I going to add to that? I think that's also a very chaos magic perspective of it. When you're working within the magical paradigm, you're all in at that time. And then when you're not doing that, maybe you're not all in, but at that moment, you're in a mode and you're working on it. I feel like a lot of misconceptions about chaos magic, at least the misconception that I had going into it was that it was all ceremonial, which has never really vibed with me.
Oh God, fuck ceremonial magic. That's work. Sometimes I think the ceremonial. I've seen a lot of people suggest that half the reason of the ceremonial stuff is inner skeptics shut the fuck up and convince the magician that, hey, I can do this. I have the authority to say, call a demon, or invite an angel, or just beg the spirits or whatever. I have the authority because I know these long, resounding, glorious sounding, rolling chants, and I know how to project from the base of my lungs and make it sound awesome and resonant. And I mean, maybe it is. Half of it is to get this shit to work, you have to believe in it. And hell, if that's a way to help yourself believe in it and you can get results, then fuck yeah. But I don't know, I just have like a sigil sticker stuck on the back of my telephone that's connected to the that's also a sigil that's in the Silicon Dawn. And everyone who uses it is powering up a tiny bit, I think. Thank you all. And I use that as my wand half the time on the on the on the on the words on the occasions where I do get off my ass and do magic. I'm honestly an armchair magician most of the time. I think I said, what is my great work? And apparently the great work is draw some fucking big-ass, obscene, sprawling graphic novels for a while.
Do you think you would consider the Tarot of the Silicon Donna hypersigil in that way? Because you were saying that you know, things have gotten interesting since you did it. Or any of your other works, for that matter.
I think I might consider it. I did not explicitly intend to make it one. I did it by accident. But Rita definitely is a hyper sigil. If you get 3 foot wide.
Oh, you're going out a little bit.
Oh, sorry. Can you still hear me?
Yes.
All right. I guess I was talking into the wrong corner of the room. Decrypting Rita definitely is. If you single volume omnibus and open it up to near the end, there is a 3 foot wide tool assisted sigil. I got addicted to doing spot gloss on stuff after the deck, and as I was working on Decrypting Rita, I realized this is potentially a delivery system. Do I want to put an explosive charge in this potential warhead? And I said yes, and I did it. And, you know, and I will not go into the details. This is basically, I want things to be better for me and all of my fans who are also helping charge my bullshit by paying me attention and spreading the word about it. And the new project that I've been spending the past half a year or so on, well, plus a couple of years of having it on the back burner and setting it all up, that too has some distinct hypersigil intentions in it. I am not entirely sure what the explosive charge will be, but I'm pretty sure I'm building something with a few places to put those. And before you ask, yes, I have read The Invisibles. I have read all of Grant Morrison's talking about sigils and charging them and whatnot. I mean, how can I have not?
I wasn't even going to ask. As soon as you grokked what hypersigils meant, it's like, you know, you're definitely well versed, which was not something I was concerned about at all. That's awesome. When is that project looking to hit the light of day?
Well, the current project is Parallax, and if you want to check it out, you can start checking it out right now. We're about about somewhere between a third and halfway through the first pair of chapters, and it's all on my website at egypt.ernash.com. It is basically it's a space opera with cartoon animals. The now outdated elevator pitch for it is, imagine you're watching Funny Animal Star Trek, except every other episode is from the point of view of the Borg. And, but I'm too busy drawing pages to actually try and spend a day coming up with a new pitch for it. But, I post new pages of that online on my website. Usually there's a few pages that show up every month. People who are on my Patreon get to see it sooner because, you know, got to try and make some money off of this long, long project somehow.
What's your Patreon?
My Patreon is unsurprisingly patreon.com/EgyptErnash. Do you want me to give the 3 second what's a Patreon, or do you think everyone involved here, Nick, everyone listening knows what one is?
Everyone knows because I have one. So I always pitch it at the end.
You get all the works in progress you could want. Well, possibly not, because I'm slow. Comics are slow.
All right. Yeah, thank you. Thank you again for this. It's been really fun just to chat with you. So what's the state of a reprint looking like for Silicon Dawn?
Well, I don't have anything solid right now. But at the beginning of this year, I took the last bits of the prints that I made for the show I had when I finished the original 78. I took those out of my closet where they've been sitting because the breakfast joint that I go to regularly just recently moved into some new larger digs, and they're looking for art for the walls, and I'm like, I have some art. I can hang this up. We can both be happy. And the next day, after I took those out and showed them off, and they said yes, I found out about a art show here in town that's looking for tarot stuff, and they're interested in some of the cards. And I had a direct message in Twitter from a small, very queer game publisher that is interested in maybe helping me. And
It is a little small. So I guess we should probably, I guess I'll probably have gone over this before this interview part. But yeah, it's small, but there's something nice about that. I actually found a small wooden box that was a perfect size for it. I think I mentioned that in my first email to you. But it's really the perfect size both for the short size of the cards and the thickness of the cards. So that was pretty cool. It would be nice to have it a more standard tarot size, though.
Yeah, it's like, that was like kind of one of the compromises we ended up having to make because this thing was just sprawling insanely already to like, 99 goddamn cards. What am I thinking? It has to be this size. I'm sorry, Ricardo. Also, major shout out to Ricardo at Los Scarabo for believing in this thing and saying, and being the one who got the rest of the company to say we're going to print this crazy thing. You would probably not have seen it without him. Down to get it to something that was affordable and small cards was part of it. I think a second edition, I think there's probably a good chance we'll drop the multiple translations of the text that Los Garibos just routinely does because they sell through all of Europe. I believe it seems to have mostly only picked up speaking areas, so I'm probably just going to be like, yeah, there's an English deck, sorry guys. And that'll let us spend less on the book when we print it, but that's up in the air. We'll see what happens.
I did actually not get to address. I love your book on it. Some of your descriptions of the cards really informed how I've read tarot,
Awesome.
in general. I'm primarily Rider-Waite. I'm not primarily Crowley, but I do dip my toe in. Yeah, I think something I always bring up when I'm, hyping up the Silicon Dawn deck is I don't generally like decks that make so many significant changes to the structure that I like because I'm weirdly traditional in some ways. But everything you do just works so well. And something else I've noticed in a lot of decks, I don't know if you've experienced this. I feel like a lot of decks that get the wands right for whatever reason don't get the cups right. And I feel like a lot of decks don't do the wands very well at all. But I haven't noticed any deficiencies like that. I feel like your deck is strangely well balanced for being so overstuffed.
That's interesting that you say you feel like I really nailed the wand.
Yeah, I
Sorry, go ahead.
no, I love the wands as earth cards in your deck. Like it works so incredibly well.
Because like you know, because one thing that drives a lot of people, a lot of traditionalists crazy is that the wands and the pentacles have swapped the elemental associations from the traditional Rider-Waite-Smith deck. And it's like, usually pentacles are earth and wands are fire. And I'm like, it just didn't work. And the back of my head said, fucking swap them. And I was like, are you sure? And for some people hate it, but there are other people out there clearly who are like, no, it works. Maybe it's just that I picked up on some general shift in the zeitgeist that now wands are earth, where they. Oh, or maybe I just made it look right and sprayed enough bullshit over the parts that don't.
I feel like it's probably a combination of you having a pretty good understanding of the underlying workings of tarot, which again I think is a very chaos magic approach to the world. And yes, you're just figuring out how to make it work, how to bullshit over it. If we're gonna marry the magic and the skeptic a little bit there.
I mean, it probably also helps that my working method was explicitly, you know how you've seen a lot of decks that are Rider-Waite-Smith clones, where clearly part of the artist's process was they got the Rider-Waite-Smith and they looked at all of the drawings Pamela did for it, and they kind of just straight up swiped a lot of her compositions. I made the explicit decision real early on to not do that, and I didn't look at any of. I made a decision, in fact, to just not look at any art from any decks I was referencing, just the books, and synthesize something new from there. So I was kind of forced to consider a lot of the things like, change elemental associations and all that, and try to figure out ways to make it work instead of, well, here's a drawing that was designed with fire in with wands as fire in mind, and I need to make that work with earth. Instead of like, okay, this whole suit is all about earth, and I need to think earth metaphors when I'm putting stuff together.
I think some of the only other swap that I've seen around, I think, is swapping. I want to say it's swapping wands and swords.
Yeah, I
I
was
think I've
thinking.
seen that as a thing.
Yeah.
But Nine of Swords is a very important card to me, so I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know. Someone would have to be just as adept at you as synthesizing that, I think, in order for it to work.
That's a lot of sweat and staring off into space and pondering to make that shit work.
Brains do a lot of work. That's still work. All right, well, thank you so much. Do you have anything else that you'd like to add before we kind of wrap this up? What you
Me?
got?
Let me skim through the notes I made based on the questions you said you'd probably be asking me, see if there's anything I didn't. My other current projects, by going to egypt.ernash.com and catching on and finding whatever social media link works for you, mostly Twitter and Mastodon these days.
What is Mastodon?
Things.
I don't even know what Mastodon is.
So Mastodon is where, and in fact, I even run a Mastodon server for myself and some of my friends, and it's all set up so like you can tw you go toot, we call them toots instead of tweets, on like Dragon Dot style, and it gets copied to.
So it's like a Twitter version of Discord, as far as I can, Grok.
No, Discord is still run by a for-profit entity.
Okay.
It gives me a lot of feels similar to the old days of bulletin board systems before the internet ate anything, in that it is community run and often and very often nonprofit. Like my Mastodon instance, I have a Patreon specifically for that, where some of my users are kicking in money to help pay the about $30 a month that it costs to keep it running. And maybe it could make more money if I put in ads, but fuck ads. I don't fucking want ads. Yeah, Mastodon is basically.
So it looks like it's joinmastodon.org and figure it out for those of us who are clueless.
And yeah, joinmastodon.org, or is it .com? I can't remember.
I'm on the website right now.
And I don't really have a solid pitch for Mastodon like I do for my own stuff loaded up in my head right now. Sorry if that's a bit incoherent.
Nope, totally makes sense. It's not your baby, but no, that this is probably relevant for many of our interests. So, thank you for even more cool information.
That has been an interesting journey to be doing, and just being part of the infrastructure of the people's glorious social network. Yeah, actually, I think that might be a good capsule pitch. It's a social network that's actually run by the people instead of by a profiteer. Raging democratic socialist or just straight up socialist, etc.
Well, my mother always did call me a red diaper baby.
Yep.
Oh. All right. Thanks again. This has been a real pleasure. I hope everyone listening enjoyed this as much as I did.
So that's a wrap. Thank you again. And now we get to the usual part of the podcast where I do all this noise. So if you enjoyed that, please feel free to email, obviously, Peggy at egypt@earnash.com. But also email me. I love feedback, love ideas. I'd love to hear what you would like to hear on future episodes. And you can also find me on Facebook. I'm Anti-Fragile Tarot. That's two words. Instagram, Anti-Fragile Tarot. That's one word. I'm Anti-Fragile Card on Twitter. I'm still really bad about using my Twitter. Sorry, friends. But I occasionally retweet interesting things, and that's not always just tarot stuff. You can also see me and Brittany from Antisocial Jewelry going back and forth, so that's always entertaining. And I'm also Anti-Fragile Tarot on Etsy if you want to buy a reading. I never did do that Lenormand month, so stay tuned. We will have Lenormand specials coming up. I just kind of died as a human being. And if you want to support this podcast, one of the best things you can do is join my Patreon. $1 a month gets you access to my Discord, access to a monthly video. I do either the full moon or the new moon. I'm going to keep trying to do both. You know, I'm really bad at making this happen. I'm sorry. Podcast twice a month is about as good as we're going to get regularly for now. Trying to be transparent over here. But if you pledge more than $1 a month, you earn a couple readings a year, and there's even a tier where you can get a monthly reading, although it's a little expensive. But even a dollar a month, you get to chat with me pretty much whenever you want. And, you know, every dollar goes towards hosting. And right now, my Patreon earnings are going towards accessibility and getting all the podcast episodes transcribed. If you can't donate money, but you can donate some time, I definitely would take a couple of episodes transcribed. So if you would like to help with that, please email me. Let me know that you'd like to, and I'll give you an episode to transcribe, probably one of the newer ones. So if you want to transcribe this one, go right ahead. It would make my entire life. All right. Thank you again. Have a witchy and or wonderful day, and I will see you in May. Bye.